Back in 1981, Michelle Manders was 2.5 years old, and she lived with her family in a duplex in Watertown. And in October of that year, she mysteriously disappeared from her bedroom in the middle of the night.
So far, police say 2.5-year-old Michelle Manders disappeared from her home here sometime Tuesday night. Her mother discovered Michelle was gone the next morning and called the police. It's not known yet if the girl left home on her own or she was abducted. Police do know Michelle probably left through the back door of her house. Other searches are being conducted around the railroad tracks near Michelle's home. Michelle's parents are appealing for help.
We have a lot of people here that are really concerned We just would like anybody that knows anything to come forward.
Jan Manders is Michelle's mother. She was 26 years old when Michelle disappeared. Jan lives in Arizona now, and I went there earlier this year to talk with her. You may hear her dogs in the background throughout my conversation with her. Jan also uses an oxygen machine, and you may be able to hear that as well. Jan had a really hard time sleeping in the weeks that Michelle was missing.
And during this time, I could hear Michelle calling out to me, my name, crying for her mommy.
Jan said that she knew Michelle wanted her to find her. Michelle was calling her for help, and it was just tearing her up inside. After Michelle had been missing about 19 or 20 days, Jan stopped hearing the voice. She stopped hearing Michelle's voice in her head, and she said that's the moment that she knew that she was too late, that Michelle wasn't calling her for help anymore, so she must be dead.
I just knew she just passed on. She's no longer here. It's like I felt her last breath here on Earth.
For the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I'm criminal justice investigative reporter Gina Barton. This is season 2 of Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. In season 1 of Unsolved, I investigated the cold case of John Zara. John was 14 years old when he was murdered in 1976. After season 1 of Unsolved, I had several people calling and emailing and asking me if I would be willing to look into the disappearances, deaths, unsolved cases of their loved ones. And that was really tough because I'm not a police detective. I'm not an FBI agent. And the John Zara case is still unsolved despite all the work that I put into it and the police put into it at this point to try and solve it. In this case, Michelle's brother Chris emailed me and asked me if I would be willing to look into her story. Even though most of the reports in Michelle's case have been destroyed, I was able to find about 200 pages from the Wisconsin Department of Justice. That was enough to help me corroborate what my sources were saying, meaning I could pursue this story. When I started looking into Michelle's case, it really seemed like there was a lot there that was worth trying to find out and some unanswered questions that maybe the answers are somewhere. How did Michelle die? Was it an accident? Or did something else happen the night of October 13th, 1981? And how did shortcomings on the part of investigators affect the outcome? Those are the questions I'll attempt to answer with this season of Unsolved. Michelle Manders was the youngest of 3 children. When she disappeared in 1981, her brother Christopher was 6 and her sister Jennifer was 4. Jan said Michelle had a really free spirit.
She was a character. She reminded me of myself. Always had to figure something out or get into something. But she had a certain bars on her crib that she knew she could take out and put back in. And one time she had come out of a crib and I thought, how is she getting out of this crib? I put her back in there. I'll be damned she didn't come out. So one night after I put her to bed, I snuck back in the bedroom and I went under her crib. I just watched her pull those 2 bars, and there goes another one. She put herself, she's on the ground now, and now she's putting them all back in. And I said, uh-huh, gotcha. And then she started crying because she knew it. She got caught. I put her back in the bed, and I went out, and I got the wood glue. And I glued him in, and all of a sudden, I went to lay down, and I could hear her in here. She couldn't get him out. She was so upset.
Michelle's father was Mike Manders, and Mike worked out of town a lot installing and repairing scientific equipment. When Mike got the promotion to cover Wisconsin for this company that he worked at, he was told by his boss that he would be spending most of his time in Milwaukee and Madison. The two cities are about 80 miles apart. And so, as Jan tells it, he got out a map and unfolded it and tried to find the place that would be right in the middle, right between Milwaukee and Madison, and that was Watertown, which at the time was a pretty small town about 50 miles from Milwaukee. Watertown was an extremely safe place to raise a family. Richard Reynolds was the Watertown police chief back when Michelle disappeared. Here's how he and his wife Shirley described crime in town back then.
Not many serious incidents in those early days.
A lot of accidents and stuff.
Yeah, there were a lot of accidents, but that was mainly the activity.
So kind of traffic-related thing.
I also talked to Richard Perkins, who was the Jefferson County District Attorney back when Michelle disappeared. During our phone calls, he told me that violent crimes in the county were few and far between.
As a district attorney in a rural county, I didn't have that many homicide cases. Most of my work was quite routine. Traffic, drunk driving, speeding, petty burglars, and even some robberies. But homicide was a rare exception. Jefferson County was not like Milwaukee County or even Dane County, where the homicide rate is more frequent. So when a homicide did occur and I could not come up with an explanation, it troubled me greatly.
Investigators at first didn't think anything suspicious had happened when Michelle disappeared. Here's Watertown Police Chief Richard Reynolds again.
I remember the call come into the department and a detective went out to investigate and come back with a report that she must have wandered off or something, that she just was not discovered in her bed.
But it wasn't long before authorities began to suspect foul play.
It was early last Wednesday morning that 2.5-year-old Michelle Manders was discovered missing from her bed. At first, police thought the toddler might have wandered off on her own. She'd been known to do that before. But 6 long days of going house to house looking for the girl, and even extensive searches of the Rock River, have turned up nothing. Now police say they are convinced Michelle was kidnapped. Late Tuesday, Watertown Police Chief Richard Reynolds issued an emotional plea to the abductor, appealing to anyone to contact the chief of police personally by phone, and adding, "I am asking for the peace of the family that their daughter be returned, alive or dead." Reynolds, the father of 4 and grandfather of 5, says not knowing one way or the other is awful.
The ordeal of never knowing whether their daughter is being taken care of or lying in peace is quite an ordeal for anyone to go through.
Reynolds won't say whether he's willing to strike a deal with the kidnapper, saying only that the return of young Michelle Manders is his top priority.
22 days after Michelle disappeared, a firefighter and a police officer on a search boat caught a glimpse of something pink in the brush on the bank of the Rock River. When they went over there to take a closer look, they realized it was the body of Michelle. Chief Reynolds broke the news to the public during a press conference in 1981.
We have no idea how long the body was in the water or how long it was there. We have been making tours through the area. It had been gone over with helicopters in the last few days, and so we have no idea how long it was at this particular location.
When was the last time that area was checked?
Within the last day or two.
Orville Kwame was a Watertown police detective back in 1981. In a recent interview, he talked about the scene where Michelle's body was found.
When her remains were located, She was found in the river down near a stone dam south of the city. And she was clothed in the same thing her mother put her in. I mean, it wasn't ripped, it wasn't torn apart, it wasn't at all mangled, it wasn't anything amiss on it. It was just like she had worn it when she went to bed.
Jan and Christopher and Jennifer were getting ready to eat lunch that day, and there was a knock on the door. Jan says she went to the door, and there were two cops standing there and a meter maid. And she couldn't figure out why there was a meter maid there, but she let them all in, and the meter maid took Christopher and Jennifer into another room. That's when the police told Jan they found Michelle's body.
The Watertown Police Department came in and said they had some news for me. And they said they found Michelle in the river. And that's when I snapped in underneath the dining room table and I just went into my own little world. I knew Christopher and Jennifer were there, but it's like they're there, but I couldn't reach them right then. I just was completely out of it, in my own little world. I wasn't even focusing on Christopher and Jennifer, but I knew they were there. There's nothing I could do at that particular minute for them. I went into my own little world and just calling out from not my baby. And I did that chanting for quite some time under the table in a rolled up fetal pipe type position and just kept chanting to myself. I couldn't control it.
In Watertown and in Jefferson County at the time, they didn't have a medical examiner, which is a doctor who does autopsies. They just had an elected coroner whose job is more filing paperwork when someone dies. So when Michelle's body was found, they brought in a pathologist named Dr. Robert Huntington III to do the autopsy on Michelle. And Dr. Huntington worked at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. He found a couple of things that could be considered suspicious. There was a possible hemorrhage in Michelle's brain and bleeding in her middle ear. These types of injuries can be caused by beating, strangling, or drowning. At the time, Dr. Huntington told reporters he couldn't be sure what caused the injuries or when they happened. He also couldn't tell how long Michelle had been in the river. DNA wasn't used in the investigation either. District Attorney Perkins explains why.
DNA evidence was in its infancy when I was in the office. But anyone who watches the popular television crime shows knows that DNA is now considered a common tool of investigation. That has made a dramatic difference, I think, in solving cases. Although with the case of the little Manders girl, with the condition of the body, I don't think there would have been any DNA evidence, even if it had been available.
I didn't find any record of investigators looking for fingerprints or preserving evidence that they found on the street or near the river. I can't be sure if those things happened because many of the police reports have been destroyed. After the pathologist, Dr. Huntington, conducted the autopsy, he said Michelle's death was a drowning by, quote, a diagnosis of exclusion. And basically what that means is he couldn't really find anything else to explain it. And so using all of the circumstances, he decided it must have been a drowning, which is a valid way to reach a conclusion. He did not, however, say one way or another what the manner of death was. So he didn't say homicide, accident, suicide, natural. Obviously, in this case, the two choices would be homicide or accident. He didn't have enough information to decide, so he did not pick one of those. Frank Myers at the time was the administrator of the Wisconsin State Department of Justice. And as soon as the autopsy was conducted, he told Michelle's parents and the public that her death was an accident. I think that was really reassuring to a lot of the other parents in Watertown, because that meant that they no longer had to worry about somebody snatching their kids from their beds in the middle of the night. I was not able to find the original coroner's report. I do have a copy of it that left the manner of death blank. But in a Department of Justice report, the Department of Justice wrote that the coroner, the elected guy, called Michelle's death an accident. I don't know whether that's true. The district attorney back then said he would have had to sign off on a death being classified as an accident. And in this case, he says he didn't. He wouldn't have. He doesn't think it was an accident.
And I was unwilling to close the case as an accident and told him that it would remain open as unexplained because I don't like the idea of ever overlooking any possible homicide case. I just don't like it. It sets wrong with me.
One reason for the skepticism about ruling Michelle's death an accident has to do with how hard it would have been for her to walk from her family's house all the way to the Rock River. At the time Michelle disappeared, she was not wearing any shoes. She was wearing her pajamas, and they were the ones with the little feet in them, so her feet were covered, but not very much. She would have had to walk out the back door over about 75 yards of grass, which was the backyard, and then also some land owned by the railroad. There was a maintenance shed. She would have had to go around that. And then right next to the set of train tracks, there are always a bunch of ballast stones, those kind of sharp rocks next to train tracks. She would have had to crawl over those or walk over those, follow the tracks for about a quarter of a mile, cross a street, and then she would get to the bridge where the train tracks go over the river. From that bridge, she would have had to either crawl over or under a railing and walk or fall down a really steep embankment to get to the river. I went to Watertown with photojournalist Mark Hoffman, and we tried to retrace the path Michelle would have taken to get to the river.
Oh, that's quite an embankment. So she'd have to fall off the bridge or come down the embankment. Either way is pretty unlikely.
When I went to Watertown and tried to walk that path, it was not easy. I'm an adult. I was wearing shoes. It was the middle of the day. It was still pretty tough to navigate. Back then, you've got a 2.5-year-old, no shoes, the middle of the night. Another complicating factor was the weather that night. Here's what Detective Kwame remembered about it.
The day that she disappeared was a nice warm day. It was a very comfortable day. The rain came and the temperature dropped and there was frozen puddles all over the place. I mean, that's how drastic a weather change took place during that period of time. Okay. And it rained hard. I would say it had to be somewhere between 12:10 and 12:15, maybe 12:20 when that rain started. Michelle was one to go out and wander around, but I don't think she would have left. If it was raining when she went out, that certainly would have deterred her.
A series of unsolved cases in the area also concerned the investigators. In the 7 years before Michelle went missing, there had been 4 teenagers who ended up murdered or missing in Jefferson County, the county where Watertown is located. At first, I think investigators, community members, didn't really think that anything nefarious or criminal had happened to Michelle. Michelle was much younger than the victims in these other crimes. She was 2.5. The other victims were between 16 and 19 years old. But still, after a while, investigators and community members began to wonder if the crimes could be connected. In 1974, 16-year-old Kathy Schoberg went to an after-prom party at the Concord House in a town called Sullivan. She walked outside after she had an argument with her boyfriend about him dancing with another girl, and then she disappeared. her body was never found, and she was never seen again. In 1979, a teenager named J. Kelly Flom was shot twice in the back of the head in a possible revenge killing. His body was found in a ditch in Ixonia, a small town just southeast of Watertown. J. Kelly Flom's murder was suspicious because there had been a party, and after the party, a teenage girl had been found murdered. This was in Milwaukee. And Jay had testified for the defendant, who was a 15-year-old boy, during the murder trial, and the 15-year-old defendant was acquitted. So there was a lot of speculation about, was the murdered girl's family after him? Was the real killer after him because they wanted to frame this 15-year-old? Kathy's disappearance and Jay's murder were 5 years apart. They were also relatively far apart geographically. Sullivan, where Kathy was last seen, was in the same county as Watertown. The crime that may have led to Jay's death, the murder at the party, happened in Milwaukee, about 40 miles away. But then, in 1980, another crime tied the others together. And that was the case of Timothy Hack and Kelly Drew. They disappeared from a wedding reception at the Concord House, the same place as Kathy. And when their bodies were found several weeks later, they were found at the edge of a forest near a cornfield in Ixonia, which is the same place where Jay's body ended up. That field was only 5 miles from the riverbank where Michelle's body was found. For Michelle's family, there's one question that has never been answered. How did she end up in the water? And not knowing the answer has troubled her family for decades, from the time she was found up until today. Jan's brother-in-law, Ron, had his suspicions. At Michelle's funeral, he accused Jan of selling Michelle to pay for drugs. Jan says he thought she was an addict because she was really thin, but she says he was completely wrong and she never had anything to do with drugs. So when he confronted her, she didn't handle it well.
So when I seen the chance, I swung at him right outside in front of the church. I think I might have gotten him. I might have given him a black eye, I don't know. But I did that and I walked off, and I wasn't going to go in that church after I did that. And then Mike's sister, Sue, this young sister came out, and she said, "You know, Janet, you know how Ron is." I said, "Yeah, but Ron should never mess with me on a day. This is a bad enough day. You shouldn't be doing this stuff right now. At all. Accusing me of selling my daughter for drugs." I says, "Don't you realize I'm burying my daughter? Leave me alone. It's hard enough."
It's really, really been difficult to talk with Jan about all she went through when Michelle disappeared. And not just what she went through, but what her other kids went through. I think any parent is always going to have doubts about whether they're doing the right thing. Should they have gone to this volleyball game or that competition, or did they spend enough time on homework or whatever? And I cannot even imagine how many times she must have second-guessed herself about that night. You know, did she check on Michelle enough times? Did she lock the back door? All those things that went through her head. And really, she feels as if not only did she fail Michelle, but she failed her other kids too. Because a lot of times when I've interviewed people about the death of a child, it seems like the ones who have another child or children tend to deal with it better, just because they kind of pull themselves together and say, "I've got these other children, I have to get it together for them." And she really tried to do that, but was just completely unsuccessful. And I know she feels guilty about that.
I had a lot of regrets. I was always trying to convince myself I only would have stayed in that room, somewhere in that room. That might not have happened.
Next time on Unsolved. The Watertown Police Department worked the case on their own for 24 hours. After that, the State Department of Justice came in, And then after 48 hours, the FBI finally came in. So by the time Watertown had all the help and all the resources that they needed to try and find Michelle, that crucial window of time for finding her had already passed.
At this point, we have absolutely no idea where to search. Absolutely no evidence indicating method of travel, direction, other than the purse, which is within a block of the home.
But police haven't ruled out other possibilities, like Michelle knowing an intruder, if there is one.
Michelle was the kind of girl that was comfortable with anybody. She had no mistrusting in anybody kind of girl. She's just happy to be with anybody. That's what worried me a lot about her. She was just too trusting of everybody.
From the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is Unsolved, A Toddler's Death, A Tangled Trail. Unsolved is reported by me, Gina Barton, and produced by Katie O'Connell. The project was edited by Greg Borowski, with web design by Aaron Coy, photos by Mark Hoffman, graphics by Lou Saldivar, and video by Lou Saldivar and Bill Schultz. Our copy editor was Debbie Davis, with social media outreach by Emily Risto. Andrew Malika worked on interactive graphics. The news reports you heard in this episode came from WISC TV News 3 and WMTV NBC 15, both in Madison. You can find more online at jsonline.com/unsolved. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Support our independent investigative work by subscribing to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find the latest offers at jsonline.com/subscribe.